From WTIP News, this is the North Shore Weekend News Roundup. I'm Jay Anderson, and here are some of the stories we've been following this week. A Twin Ports Research Institute will study environmental issues facing shipping and Great Lakes marine transportation under a five-year agreement with the federal government. The Duluth News Tribune reports the Great Lakes Maritime Research Institute's first task is to lead a study of whether it is feasible to convert to natural gas 10 bulk carriers that generate steam by burning fuel oil. According to Michael Parsons, professor emeritus from the University of Michigan's Naval Architecture and Marine Engineering Department, who will lead the study, quote, converting to natural gas would make them some of the cleanest ships on the lakes. Most of the ships were built during the 1950s. Converting the carriers to natural gas also could reduce fuel and crew costs. The U.S. Department of Transportation Maritime Administration is paying for the study by the Great Lakes Maritime Research Institute, which is a consortium of the University of Wisconsin-Superior and the University of Minnesota-Duluth, with 10 affiliate universities around the Great Lakes. While the gas is cheaper than the bunker fuel the Lakers burn, it requires 3.5 to 4 times as much volume as fuel oil containing a similar amount of energy. Part of the challenge of the study is to see if there's enough room in a ship to put in enough liquefied natural gas so that the ships would have the range they need to operate on the Great Lakes. Ore carriers, for example, have routes that are 6 or 7 days long. Using natural gas to help power ships is not new. It started in 1960. Ferries in Canada, Virginia, and Norway use natural gas. A Hennepin County judge and vocal critic of a lack of weapons screening at 3 suburban courtrooms says he's refusing to hear cases at them until stronger security precautions are put into place. District Judge Lloyd Zimmerman's ultimatum follows a December 15th shooting at the Cook County Courthouse in Grand Marais that critically injured a prosecutor and witness, underscoring concern about the lack of weapon screening at courthouses in some Minnesota counties. Zimmerman wrote in an email, quote, I'm tired of driving to Brookdale, the courtroom everyone who knows agrees is the most likely place for a shooting or violence to occur, and not know whether I will be carried out in a body bag that day, unquote. He cited the high number of domestic violence cases at that courtroom. He also asked fellow judges to stand in solidarity with him and refused to take his place. Zimmerman, who is 57, is an 11-year veteran of the bench. He intends to continue hearing cases in Hennepin County Government Center in downtown Minneapolis, where visitors are screened before they can enter the court and administration towers. In a related story, an anti-domestic violence group in Wisconsin is urging that state's Supreme Court justices to curtail concealed weapons in courthouses. The Wisconsin Coalition Against Domestic Violence urged the justices this week to ban anyone from carrying a weapon on a day a relative is scheduled to appear in an action affecting the family. Wisconsin is currently processing thousands of concealed carry permits. There's a completely effective but substantially less costly plan on the table for treating stormwater runoff at the Grand Marais Recreation Park. The Park Board Tuesday received an update for their Community Connections Park entry plan. The stormwater treatment portion of the design, as well as other revisions, could lower their cost by half. Park Manager Dave Terstig.
It's an ongoing project. We're developing a trail on the east side of the park next to the Folk School, and we're into that revision stage of the game with the concept plans. When we looked at the last concept, it was quite spendy. It was in the $500,000 neighborhood. So we went back to the consultants, SEH, and we asked them to put together a base plan, just a trail and a site stabilization plan. And so the Park Board was presented that. It was sort of a concept that pared back on the stormwater, no bells and whistles, if you will. And that came in about half as much in the $250,000 range. So to that, you can add on stormwater treatment.
The consultants brought the board several pages of detailed analysis on options for dealing with stormwater treatment. In the end, the board will likely consider one of two options.
The underground grit chamber is like a large concrete septic tank in the ground, and it settles out the solids. It slows down the stormwater, and it is designed to remove sediment from the flow of the water, and then you go into that and you vacuum it out. it's an expensive piece of management, just like your septic system is. So that was deemed a little bit too costly in the initial plan, and so now it's being presented as an a la carte feature, as a, you know, $300,000 option. Another option would be a $30,000 pond. A bioretention pond is something that's a lot more cost effective when we look at its sediment removal potential. It's still there. It's still going to slow down the water and settle out. This is sort of the traditional way of treating stormwater. It's on the surface, but it's a lot more cost effective.
The reason that stormwater runoff treatment is important is that rainwater and snowmelt all runs downhill.
This is a real last stretch of the stormwater train when it comes to Lake Superior and the watershed above it. It's the neighborhoods of town. It's Highway 61. It's the site itself, of course, is a rocky ditch right now that needs to be stabilized. And then if we want to slow down and trap some of that upstream sediment, we would look for a pond or a underground structure.
The board has time to consider refinements to the Community Connections Plan because there's no immediate deadline.
It's a evolving project. It's a build-out of the master plan, and it's the kind of project work that takes time.
Once a plan is finalized, the park will seek funding from several potential sources, including the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency and IRRRB. Lonnie Dupree, the adventurer from Grand Marais, was making steady progress toward the summit of Mount McKinley earlier this week. Dupree had reached about 14,200 feet, a place called Windy Corner, where he planned to spend New Year's Day resting, charging all electronics, and organizing all supplies for high camp. The summit of Mount McKinley, also known as Denali, is 20,320 feet. It's the highest peak in North America. Once Dupree climbed above Windy Corner, he encountered numerous large crevasses from where the Bercheron Glacier comes off of Denali. Dupree, who is 50, is attempting to be the first person to reach the summit of Mount McKinley solo in January. He began the climb on the 22nd of December after a plane dropped him off at 7,200 feet. This Wednesday, the early morning calm winds ended, picking up right as Lonnie was dressed and ready to start to climb the 17,200 feet. Unfortunately, they were bad enough to prevent him from moving up. On Thursday, it looked better, but unfortunately, the winds did not subside as hoped. Lonnie woke up to minus 30 degrees Fahrenheit and 45-mile-an-hour winds, bringing the temperature down to a bitter minus 72. He spent the day cleaning house, digging out his door, and stretching his legs outside his 4x4 snow cave. Dupree tried climbing McKinley last winter, but bad weather stopped him at 17,200 feet. Dupree plans to make the summit attempt from 17,200 this time around, but would only have a week or so to wait out bad weather at that elevation. You've been listening to the North Shore Weekend News Wrap-Up. To hear more from the WTIP News team and to check out the full versions of our stories, visit us at wtip.org. For North Shore Community Radio, I'm Jay Anderson, wishing you a great weekend.